wars in which she had fought. A warning horn sounded. Tyrande searched for the source, but instead found Chandris riding toward her, Ashala, the High Priestess's own cat, racing alongside. "Mount!" Chandris called as she pulled up. "Mount quickly!" "What is it?" Chandris pointed to the east. As if a silent but raging river, the goblin mist surged forward. Gigantic trees vanished as the thick fog enveloped them. Within the short moment that Tyrande had watched it, the mist had nearly reached the river. She leapt aboard her nightsaber just as another horn blew from the southeast. It did not surprise either of them to see that the mist now rushed forth there also. A shout from ahead signaled the mist's advance there also. Tyrande marveled at the mechanisms the goblins must have put together to create this fog. As the wind shifted briefly, she also smelled the stench that Ashenvale's defenders had reported. The fog was more of a huge patch of smoke, as if the forest were on fire somewhere. "You would do better farther back," Chandris suggested. "I did not come here to hide behind everyone else. I am here because I am needed, Chandris, especially at this moment." Tyrande raised her hands toward the sky. Even though the moon was not evident now, the beam of silver light shone down brighter upon her. Tyrande focused her mind entirely on her prayer. She asked much of Ilune, but believed that the deity expected what she intended, and would grant it. Chandris gasped, then recovered. Other sentinels looked her way, but the general angrily waved them back to their watch. A beam of moonlight shone down upon Tyrande. The High Priestess glowed brighter than the day. The glow grew, first spreading before her, then expanding to her left and right. The light of Ilune draped across the Alliance lines, confronting the encroaching goblin mist wherever it was. The foul-smelling fog moved above the river first, reaching the midway point. But then the moonlight met it. Tyrande stared straight ahead. As the power of Ilune neared the mist, she felt the other priestesses who had come with the expedition finally join her efforts. Strengthened by their prayers, Tyrande's plan thrust ahead. As she had done against the evil of the Nightmare Lord, the High Priestess let the light of the Mother Moon burn away the goblin's creation. Compared to the Nightmare's monstrous fog and its frightening shadows, the Horde's mist proved a weak foe. The moonlight ate away at it with no difficulty, and within seconds it already cleansed the air above the river. The defenders cheered. Those cheers grew even stronger as Ilune revealed anew the forest beyond. The goblin mist faded as if nothing. That did not mean that its creators did not try to fight back. Ahead of the light, the fog abruptly thickened. Yet even then it proved no match for the Mother Moon's gentle illumination. The light pushed on, moving even after there was no visible sign of the mist left to the sentinels and their allies. Although she could not see what happened so far away, Tyrande sensed a sudden ceasing of the goblin's fog. Why waste such effort when it was to no avail? She should have felt confidence with this first, very obvious victory, but the High Priestess could not shake the feeling that there was something amiss. Next to her, Chandris screamed something unintelligible. The next moment the world around Tyrande exploded. What sounded like a roar accompanied the eruption, and her first thought was, "Deathwing! Deathwing comes to fight for the Horde!" Even as she tumbled, a part of her knew that the thought was a foolish one. The huge dragon would not have bothered with such a petty spectacle. Deathwing, who abhorred all lesser life, would have preferred raising the entire area, combatants and all. Her concentration broken, the prayer ended, and with it the light. She felt pain in her left arm and leg. When Tyrande tried to see what was happening, at first all she saw was more fog. No, not fog. Dust. The air was filled with dust and even large fragments of rock and earth that rained down on not just her, but everyone else in the area. Tyrande made out at least three sentinels nearby who lay either dead or unconscious. A large, moist nose sniffed her, Tyrande's nightsaber licked her leg, where for the first time the High Priestess saw that a shard of rock stuck out near the thigh. Wincing, she seized the shard and tugged it free, then quickly prayed over the wound. The gap healed, leaving only bloodstains to mark it. Touching her arm, Tyrande only found some blood. No longer concerned for herself, she looked for Chandris. The first sign of the other night elf was one that made Tyrande shiver with anguish. Chandris's nightsaber lay sprawled, its skull crushed in by a very large piece of rock. Chandris! All else forgotten, Tyrande stepped past her mount and climbed over the dead cat. Chandris! There were two individuals in her life who meant more to her than anything. Malfurion and the orphan who had become her daughter. Tyrande had never let Chandris know just how much she worried about the younger Night Elf's duties as head of their forces. So many of the High Priestess's personal prayers had concerned Chandris's continued safety. And now, there was no sign of Chandris on the other side. Tyrande looked farther on, fearing that her daughter had been thrown far away. Tyrande spotted another body, a sentinel, surely dead, from the awkward angle in which she lay. But it was not Chandris. Even though she felt some shame in doing so, the High Priestess gave thanks to Alun for even this momentary respite. Then a groan from the direction of the dead nightsaber made her turn. Tyrande rushed to the area by the tail, a place to which she had paid little mind. There, a good portion of the cat was buried under the rubble of whatever had struck. Chandris's arm, the covering dust making it blend into the ground around it, lay just under one of the feline's hind legs. It moved as Tyrande neared, and again she gave thanks to Alun for this personal blessing. No sooner had she knelt to see what she could do than several other sentinels rushed up to help. They had evidently seen what had happened, but could not get to the two any sooner. With careful swiftness, they hefted the dead nightsaber off of the general. Tyrande put a hand to Chandris's back and prayed. She did not know what injuries Chandris had suffered and did not care. She only hoped that Alun would heal whatever had happened to her daughter. Chandris groaned again, but this time with more life. She glowed with the light of Alun as Tyrande finished her prayer. Only when the High Priestess pulled her hand away did the glow fade. To Tyrande's relief, Chandris's breathing was strong and regular. As the High Priestess pulled back, it was as if the world had suddenly returned in all its chaotic fury. There were shouts coming from everywhere and the familiar hiss of arrows on their way to deliver death. She hoped the last sound had come from the bows of the sentinels and not the horde, but knew that it was likely a combination of both. Sentinels rushed past her, some mounted, and all of them with anxious looks on their faces. A roar that reminded her of Deathwing thundered across the area. Belatedly, Tyrande recognized that it was not one roar, but a multitude of voices shouting in unison. She looked toward the river, and saw that beyond it the forest was filled with orcs, tauren with massive totems, trolls, including more than one witch doctor, and more. The floodgates had opened, and through them rushed the horde.
They were seeking you,
Chandris gasped as a pair of the sentinels helped her rise.
They knew you were here, and they used the damned mist to make you act.
Tyrande peered at the area around them. Virtually all of the huge boulders that had dropped among them had been concentrated on the center, where indeed she had been situated. The High Priestess suspected that she could thank luck as much as her patron for the fact that she had survived. Actually, she could thank one more.
You threw yourself at me. With all due respect, you are more important to our people than I am,
Chandris responded, straightening. I did not know that I would land just where my mount would fall after the next strike. The horns sounded again. Another flight of arrows from the Alliance side flew over the river. The Horde forces held up their shields, creating a wall. Most of the arrows either bounced off the shields or stuck in them, but several still caught their intended targets. A number of warriors fell or pulled back with bolts sticking out of them.
They have not managed to ford the river yet, Tyronda noticed. It is deep, and the current is strong, but that should still not be such a problem for them. They are testing us out. I know it.
Danaya rode up.
General, they did much the same when they attacked our main outpost. The commander thought that they were counting our archers. Likely enough. It will do them no good. We have got far more than we are using. The others will be a nice surprise when they think they have got our numbers down.
As the Alliance archers continued to fire, and the orcs on occasion fired back, more mounted sentinels readied along various points of the line. Tyronda and Chandris had come to Ashenvale with a battle plan already in mind that did not need to wait for whatever the Horde intended to throw at them. Four contingents of huntresses armed with lances now kept their mounts ready for the signal. With them stood double their number of sentinels on foot, both those with glaives and others with swords. Accompanying them were dwarves of the Dark Iron and Bronzebeard clans, while farther back, Wildhammer dwarves waited for word to urge their griffins skyward. Humans, Draenei, and gnomes, the last armed with some especially vicious devices, intermingled with the first two dwarven clans. A few magi, mostly from Theramore, were also in attendance, their focus on their dark counterparts. Tyronda's priestesses had separated into two groups. One went about healing the wounded, while the second watched Tyronda expectantly. They were to assist in her own attack. Another unit consisting of defenders from Ashenvale formed a new center. Danaya had volunteered to take command of them in place of Haldrissa, and Chandris had agreed to that. The general gave the younger sentinel some last-minute instructions, then sent her off to her soldiers. Chandris turned to Tyronda.
Are you ready? Can you take over?
The devastation around the High Priestess still fresh in her mind, and especially the deaths of those who had paid for being in the vicinity of her. Tyronda flatly replied,
Be ready.
With a crooked grin, Chandris secured another mount from one of the other sentinels, then rode off. Tyronda, of necessity, led her own cat farther to the rear. Although she ached to join Chandris in battle, for this she had to be in a safer position. Only when her task was accomplished could she enter the fray herself. The apparent impasse held. Making certain that the assigned priestesses were ready, Tyronda waited for the right moment. A horn blew from where Chandris commanded. The Alliance archers ceased firing. The orcs forming the first ranks roared, then charged toward the river. Tauren and trolls followed them, while in the back the undead warlocks of the Forsaken and witch doctors from the trolls began casting spells that Tyronda hoped her own side would be able to counter with minimal losses. Arrows flew toward the Alliance's own front ranks, where huntresses, lances ready, were forced to crouch behind shields and barriers. In concert with the other priestesses, Tyronda prayed to Ilun. Moonlight touched her and her followers. It then reached forth beyond the defenders' lines, stretching across the river. However, where before it had simply glowed everywhere in order to dissolve the false mist, now its light focused as if through a diamond. And even moonlight in the eyes can blind. The front ranks of the Horde were caught in their tracks. The hulking warriors stumbled. Whether orc, tauren, or some other powerful fighter, there was nothing they could do. The light caught them by surprise. It dazzled their gazes. Several orcs ran into one another, their positions made worse by the fact that they were half in the water.
Now, Chandris, Tyronda silently called. Now!
The blare of a new horn heartened her, as did the battle cry of the rushing sentinels and the deadly hiss of the protecting archers. Into the river raced the lancers, their nightsabers undaunted by the water or the enemy ahead. Chandris had utilized the knowledge of Ashenvale's defenders to know where the shallowest areas were, aiding the momentum of the charge. From the other side, there came the bleat of a horn. Still blinded, the Horde fighters shuffled back as best they could.
They will be slaughtered, Tyronda thought with some guilt.
She knew that she did the right thing, but still she also prayed that perhaps the enemy would see fit to either keep running or wisely surrender. The first of the lancers reached the other side, the crumbling lines of the orcs and their allies only a few yards ahead now. The expert aim of sentinel archers downed several brutish warriors who refused to retreat with the rest. Orcs, by far the bulk of Garrosh's expedition, lay strewn everywhere, their fearsome tusked faces often still seeming angry in death. Some had more than half a dozen bolts sticking out of their thick hides, and even more stuck in their armor and shields. The orcs had done their best to protect themselves, but against so many arrows, even the best of armor proved inadequate. Yet even despite the deadly downpour, several orcs, arrows deep in legs, arms, and torso, survived to keep some order as they dragged more severely wounded comrades back from danger. Two grabbed banners from fallen comrades, waving the horde flags in defiance as the sentinels moved in after them. Despite the surviving orcs' bravado, it appeared that the destruction of Silverwing would soon be avenged. However, of even greater import was the growing hope that the liberation of all Ashenvale seemed possible, if Garrosh's ambition could be crushed here and now. Again, the enemy horn sounded, yet this time in a more fearsome, defiant manner. Tyrande had to assume that Garrosh intended a stand on safer ground. The only trouble was, the moonlight followed the horde, continuing to blind them even as the lancers drew within striking range. The warlocks and other casters could not even give the proper cover, as they were also unable to face the moonlight. That in turn gave more advantage to the Alliance spellcasters, who worked in earnest to put an end to the horde's magical threat. Fearsome blasts bombarded the warlocks nearest to the front. The horde horn blared once more, its signal not at all seeming to call for retreat. Rather, it encouraged attack in its tone, promised victory. But instead of turning to face their foes again, the orcs and other fighters remaining from the front lines did a strange thing. They scattered to the trees as if trying to get out of the way. How they hoped to escape the Nightsabers by fleeing, she could not say. Night elves were more forest creatures than orcs, tauren, or even trolls. Their cats were just as wily and quick in such areas, and the riders knew well how to handle their lances even among the trees. Chandris must have suspected something, for a horn sounded on the Alliance side, one that signaled for a regrouping rather than a continued hunt through forest. With so many of the enemy now turned from the direction of the battle, the High Priestess finally chose to cease the prayer. Even as the moonlight faded, she urged her mount forward. If there was danger to her people, and to her Chandris, Tyrande needed to be nearby. The first wave of foot soldiers had made it to the other side behind the lancers. Some threw their glaives at retreating targets, but most already began regrouping. Watching them, Tyrande breathed with relief. Garrosh would find the advance line able to hold against his warriors. A monstrous roar rumbled through the region. A massive rock appeared in the sky, then dropped down hard on a band of lancers just about to join their compatriots. The hapless riders never even realized their doom. The rock crushed some, and the fragments from its shattering slew the others. More rocks came flying through the air. Ashenvale's defenders had warned about hidden catapults, but Tyrande had never witnessed anything like this. There was something different. She was reminded of her own near death and how that assault, too, had seemed not quite what it appeared. The first rock had done the most harm. Now warned, the Alliance army better avoided the areas where the missiles dropped. Trees began shaking farther into the forest ahead. Another roar thundered across the landscape, and this time was answered by several more, all from the same direction. What seemed initially a series of rhythmic explosions accented the roars. Tyrande frowned. Not explosions. It was as if they were hoofbeats. But for such, the animals would have to be gigantic. The tree line flew away, entire oaks tossed as if nothing. a humongous shape, with some resemblance in outline to a centaur, but much bulkier, burst out among the stunned defenders.
"Halloon, preserve us,"
the High Priestess blurted. The giant creature seized a lancer and mount with one hand and tossed both casually over his shoulder. Night Elf and Cat went screaming to their deaths. The behemoth stomped at the closest sentinels on foot, crushing one beneath his sturdy elephantine feet. Indeed, the lower half of the body had much similarity to such a creature, or rather to its larger, more deadly cousin from Northrend, the mammoth. Yet where the head and shoulders should have been, the upper torso of another fantastic creature roughly akin to a human began. The towering monster, two long tusks arching down from the sides of his mouth, eagerly searched the ground before him for more victims. And as the one behemoth stomped among the scattering defenders, another broke through the forest elsewhere, sending trees down on the fighters and seizing other victims in his thick, four-fingered hands. As the second monster crushed the life out of his prey, the rest of the trees exploded, and identical fiends fell upon the would-be victors. The battle had turned into a catastrophe of proportions as terrible as the legendary creatures loose among the tiny night elves.
"They have set Magnator upon us," the High Priestess marveled grimly. "They have dared set Magnator loose in Ashenvale."
The danger to the Horde itself surely should have been obvious to Garrosh, but he had taken the risk, and thus far had chosen well. To bring the savage giants of the wastes of Northrend to Ashenvale had surely been a mighty test in itself. Tyrande could not imagine how even the Horde could have managed to bring them without some sacrifice already on its part. With heavy thumps, the Magnetar wreaked havoc merely by moving. Tyrande counted 8 in all, every one of them bulls, and though a small number, it was astonishing to see them together. So violent were Magnetar that males such as these lived isolated from one another, or else they constantly came to blows. The beasts crushed and tossed about their victims as if the mighty Alliance army was little more than ants. A nightsaber lacking its rider attempted to bite at the heavy cylindrical leg of one of the Magnetar. For its bravery, the cat was taken up in one hand, then torn apart with both. The Magnetar then threw the mangled pieces into the river, which already ran red with blood. Somewhere out there, Tyrande knew Chandris was trying her best to save her troops. The High Priestess yearned to continue her own charge, but knew that she had to try to stop the Magnetar first. Reining her cat to a halt, she called upon Ilune's aid in that regard. As it always did, the light of the Mother Moon shone down upon her. Tyrande prayed for guidance. Yet another huge boulder soared above her. Too late, Tyrande realized that the Magnetar were the catapults, and for them Garrosh evidently had one particular target in mind. The glow of Ilune had actually pointed her out to them. The Magnetar, for all their savagery, were intelligent enough to understand what was needed. Garrosh wanted the glowing target destroyed. If it was another priestess, that would be one fewer to aid Tyrande. And if they slew the High Priestess, they knew that they would deal the Night Elves and the Alliance a devastating blow. The shadow of the boulder passed in front of her. The High Priestess pulled hard, turning her mount away from the oncoming crash and the deadly spray that would follow. As she did, though, a sharp pain caught her near the shoulder blade. Another did near the lower part of her back. 2 arrows had struck the High Priestess. Tyrande knew that she had been tricked. Whether by the Magnetar or 1 or 2 daring archers, Garrosh wanted the Night Elf ruler dead. In this case, the boulder had been the decoy the archers had needed. And as the monsters from Northrend tore through her people, Tyrande dropped limply to the ground. Chapter 25. valor. Vardin looked impatiently at Archmage Mordant as they neared the grove where they were supposed to finally have answers to the horrendous crimes against the Highborn. Mordant moved with the confidence of one who had made the right decision, a decision of which the younger, ambitious spellcaster did not approve in the least.
What does it matter if we are handed the culprits' heads? Darnassus is complicit in this. You know that.
This went on much too long and with too many excuses.
The Archdruid is—
Someone who has given us the chance to survive, Mordant replied calmly as he walked.
We do not need him to survive. The Highborn—
The senior mage turned abruptly, causing not only Vardin but the rest of the party to stumble to a halt. Mordant studied the other magi, all younger than him, before finally settling his gaze upon Vardin once more. Azeroth has changed. Changed in a manner unseen since Zinashari fell. Nothing is as it was before. What we have done to maintain our ways for all these millennia no longer applies. How many are there of us now? How are our ranks replenishing? How many children born to our people over the last generation? Although no one answered, not even Vardin, it was not because they did not know the answers. Rather, it was just the opposite. They knew too well the truth. When we were immortal, the senior archmage went on, such things did not matter much. Death was a minor occurrence, generally due to carelessness. Now, as with our brethren in Darnassus, we face mortality. But unlike our brethren, the Highborn will not be mourned if we cease to exist, unless we prove we can change. We must abide by the rules of the High Priestess and the Archdruid until we are accepted back into Night Elf society.
We fought beside them, Vardin started.
A moment of necessity more than remorse. As soon as we could, we reverted to our ways, played with our magic, and did nothing else.
We learned nothing from Zinashari's fall. These murders cannot be forgiven.
Mordant thumped the bottom of his staff on the ground. Sparks flew, and the dirt and grass beneath burnt black.
And they will not. If the assassins are captured, they will be turned over to us. Darnassus justice demands that as much as our own. Now will that satisfy you for the moment?
Vardin sullenly nodded. I will not betray Malfurion and his mate, Vardin. They honor their word. I honor mine. That is the key to our future. We respect each other. Archmage Mordant turned back to the path ahead and resumed walking. The other Highborn followed, Vardin a step after. However, he quickly repositioned himself next to their leader, and no one argued. Vardin had the power and skill to maintain his position, unless Mordant decreed otherwise, and despite their current differences, the senior Archmage still favored the younger spellcaster. A figure suddenly stepped out onto the path. They recognized one of those who served Maiev Shadowsong.
I have come to lead you.
She glanced around at the party. Best to keep close together. You will need to on the path ahead. Vardin sneered, but Mordant politely responded. Lead on. We are anxious to have this concluded.
So are we. This has gone on long enough.
Some of the Highborn nodded satisfaction at this comment. Darnassus, after all, understood that these heinous crimes had to be punished. They followed the slim female along the winding route, which wound even more than Mordant or Vardin recalled from the directions given to them earlier. Still, all that mattered was that soon they would be at their destination.
Where is Maiev? Mordant asked. Has she the villains ready for us? Justice will be meted out when you arrive there. She promises that.
Even Vardin radiated some satisfaction upon hearing that. The highborn grew more eager to reach their destination, which their guide assured them was very close now. They entered a clearing. The watcher strode on. "Is this not it?" queried Varden impatiently. Their guide continued walking, not even bothering to look back.
"Insolent whelp!"
Varden raised a hand toward her. Mordant used his staff to bring the hand down before the other mage could cast.
"Wait. There is something wrong."
Jagged lines of crimson energy thrust up from the ground. They ensnared the highborn before any among them could cast a spell. The energy then ran through each of the magi, who doubled over from sharp pain.
"As arrogant as ever," someone commented with contempt.
"More than 10,000 years, and you still think the world bends to your slightest desire."
Mordant, Varden, and some of the others managed to look up at their captor. Maiev Shadowsong smirked as she stepped in front of her prisoners.
"The Archdruid was more of a challenge than all of you put together."
"What is the meaning of this?"
Archmage Mordant demanded through gritted teeth.
"Release us!"
She chuckled.
"You are a dense lot. I am just finishing what I started. Only this time, to end the game once and for all."
"You," Varden snarled. "You are the assassin. I was right. Darnassus betrays us."
"Darnassus betrayed me, you mean?"
Maiev glared. "I served loyally for thousands of years. I protected the sanctity of our life.
Then in one fell swoop, the great Archdruid returns to the High Priestess, marries her, and is proclaimed co-ruler. He declares us undeserving of regaining our immortality, and then, worst of all, he brought your evil back among us."
"Where is the Archdruid?" Mordant demanded. "What have you done?"
"Never mind him," Varden interrupted. "The assassin stands in front of us."
Grinning darkly, he started to glow with power.
"You have 2 ways to die," their captor calmly said. "One is to accept the punishments for your crimes. For that, you will die relatively painlessly."
"A little pain means nothing to a highborn," Varden mocked, the glow about him growing stronger. "Let us see how much pain you can stand." Despite the magical bonds that surrounded them, Varden clenched his fist and cast. His body flared bright from so much gathered energy. He screamed, or rather tried to scream. His mouth gaped, but no sound escaped. Varden's spell faded. Instead, a black aura enveloped him. Those highborn nearest to him did their best to pull away for fear that somehow they would be caught up in whatever was happening. Varden continued his voiceless scream. His skin seared and began to peel away in burnt fragments. His eyes turned black. He shriveled. The burning highborn struggled to move, but the bonds of energy held him in place as the spell of the black aura slowly consumed him. His elegant garments became cinders. His flesh crumbled away, followed by the muscle and sinew beneath. Only when those were almost gone did the life extinguish from him. Moments later, even his bones had been reduced to ash that itself vanished. The black aura faded.
"That is the second choice of death you have,"
Maiev blandly remarked. The imprisoned spellcasters looked aghast. Recovering, Mordant said,
"There is no need for this. Some agreement should surely be possible."
She turned from them, but not before giving Mordant a crooked, mocking smile.
"Oh, we have. We have agreed on your choice of death. Next, we are sure to agree on the crimes you are guilty of that make you deserve it."
Mordant looked at her open-mouthed, aware that he talked to someone who was utterly mad. and who held their lives in her hands. The moment the sounds of war rang out, Haldrissa had abandoned her rest. Long used to sleeping in her armor, a survival trait of any sensible sentinel, the commander had only had to put on her helmet. Seizing up her glaive, she had rushed to her nightsaber and ridden in search of her troops. She had spotted them too late. Danaya already had them crossing the river with the other groups. Haldrissa had felt an emptiness at watching her warriors go into battle without her. But then she had witnessed the charge of the Magnetar. Like so many others, the veteran commander stared at the horrors looming over their comrades. She watched helplessly as one gigantic creature seized part of a cracked tree trunk and used it to bat away scattering sentinels. Another took sadistic pleasure in snatching one fighter after another and throwing them toward the defenders still on the other side of the river. Amidst all the carnage that the Magnetar created, Haldrissa spotted a more subtle threat. The horde moved in again behind the behemoths, and among the first were archers. With the sentinels in disarray, the archers quickly moved across open areas in the river and onto a part of the bank where one of the Magnetar's thrown boulders had sent the defenders elsewhere for the moment. The archers did not move as if simply going into battle, and for most purposes they would have been better suited remaining on the opposing shore. These had some other, more nefarious purpose in mind, although she could not say what. Then some of the Magnetar began tossing boulders again, this time specifically behind the center of the Alliance lines. Haldrissa had to make her cat veer away from that area in order to avoid being struck by sharp flying fragments. As the nightsaber turned, the High Priestess briefly came into her view, as did the fact that Tyranda Whisperwind was directly in the path of the hurtling missiles. There was nothing Haldrissa could do for the High Priestess, who she realized was the particular target of the Horde. She gave thanks to Ilune when Tyranda evaded the deadly rain, then realized too late why the archers risked themselves so. By that time, two arrows had downed the ruler of the Night Elves. Priestesses and sentinels rushed to the still figure. In Haldrissa's mind, they wasted their energy. She was also furious with herself for not preventing what had happened, even if in truth there was little she could have done. The Horde became the focus of her collapsing world. They had destroyed Silverwing, slain scores of brave Night Elves, and now assassinated the High Priestess. Haldrissa thought that Azeroth was surely falling into doom, but she swore there and then that the Horde would pay dearly. The commander turned her mount back to the mayhem. She searched everywhere for some way to avenge her people on the orcs. And there he stood. Haldrissa first recognized Garrosh by his stance. He was absolute master of the battlefield. He waved his foul weapon over his head, and even from where she was, Haldrissa imagined she could hear the axe's wail. Beside him were several orcs who were likely guards, one of whom also carried with him a curled horn. Without at first understanding what she did, the bitter commander charged toward the river. As she rode, reflexes took over, and out came the glaive. When an orc stood in her path, his eyes showing his eagerness for her blood, she rewarded him with a toss of the triple-bladed weapon that shot forth with the speed of an arrow and cut a swath through his barrel chest. Haldrissa had already caught the bloody glaive and ridden past before the orc's corpse could even fall face first into the water. On the other side, someone shouted her name. The commander stirred from her obsession just enough to see Danaya staring wide-eyed at her. Two other mounted sentinels from her outpost also paused to watch. Haldrissa paid them no more mind. Only Garrosh Hellscream mattered. Despite a Magnetar noticing her, the veteran warrior urged her nightsaber on. A huge hand grabbed at the commander, but Haldrissa managed to evade the grasping fingers. She rode under the behemoth, avoiding a moving leg. Ahead, an orc mounted on a huge wolf saw her fast approaching and moved to intercept. She could not throw the glaive here, but was more than practiced at using it hand to hand. Haldrissa blocked the axe that came at her chest, then slashed with the curved edge of one blade. The glaive tore through the orc's throat, nearly beheading him. He tumbled back, dead. But other orcs now saw her and seemed aware that she could be so close for only one reason. They moved to surround the night elf, who vaguely registered that she was going to die here, only yards from her goal. However, no sooner did the first of the reinforcements join her original foe than he was attacked by another mounted sentinel. Haldrissa saw that it was Danaea. The younger officer fought with a zeal that showed that she understood what her commander hoped to do, regardless of the consequences. Danaea was not alone, either. Suddenly, several survivors of Haldrissa's command closed with the orcs. With them were some of Silverwing's warriors, including both Saura and the rogue. The enemy was now temporarily outnumbered. Two orcs fell swiftly. Haldrissa's makeshift attack force pushed deeper. At last she could see Garrosh himself. The first of his guards faced her. Around Haldrissa, Danaea and the others who had joined the commander fought valiantly to create an opening. But time was running out. Haldrissa knew that. The longer she remained unable to reach the war chief, the more likely that she never would. A night elf perished with an axe buried in her chest. Another simply vanished in the melee, her riderless mount battling that of an orc. Haldrissa's comrades were forced to bunch together as more orcs and even Torin moved in from other positions. Garrosh, seemingly oblivious to the struggle so near him, continued toward the river. Haldrissa swore. There were too many foes between her and the warchief. She had lost her chance, and soon she would lose her life. For nothing. The trumpeter blew the note to press the attack. The horde ranks began crossing the river again, the Magnetar leaving them an open path occasionally littered by the ghastly remains of their victims. Haldrissa eyed the trumpeter, then urged her cat on. Caught up in the horde's impending triumph, the orc did not notice her approach. The commander threw the glaive. The orc turned just as the spinning weapon reached him. The movement upset some of Haldrissa's accuracy, and though the blade all but sheared his neck in half, leaving no doubt to the trumpeter's death, the glaive dropped to the ground a short distance farther instead of returning. Damn! Dismounting, Haldrissa ignored the lost weapon and rushed to the body. She found the horn still clutched tightly in one hand. Too tightly, in fact. It took all her strength to force open the fingers enough to pull the horn free. No one was looking. Thanking Ilun for this last chance, the veteran warrior put the horn to her lips and blew. She knew from past experience some of the general calls used by the Horde. Advance and retreat were the most obvious. Haldrissa now blew the latter as best as she could recall and prayed that in the heat of battle most of those who would heed such a call would not recognize any mistake. At first, it seemed that nothing was happening. Haldrissa blew again. As she finished, she saw the first rose, already almost across, falter. Even the Magnetar hesitated. With all her breath, the night elf blew a third time. The horde lines began to return. Their faces were filled with confusion, a contrast to their expressions during their confident rush forward. That confusion grew, and the retreating enemy now ran faster. Managing to inhale enough air, Haldrissa sounded the call one more time. Even the Magnetar began to turn back. One Torin tried to wave the leader back to the front, only to be crushed under one heavy foot as the behemoth, entirely ignorant of his victim, thundered back into the forest from which he and the others had emerged. "Give me that," rumbled an orc voice. She lunged away from the speaker in the direction of her glaive, all the while clutching the horn. In the distance, Haldrissa heard the other trumpeters now repeating the call to retreat. They were taking their cue from what they believed to be the master trumpeter with Garrosh. If her adversary succeeded in taking the horn and then blowing the attack once more, all her work would be for nothing. Her hand came down by the glaive just as an axe tried to cut the appendage off. Haldrissa bit her lip as the edge of the axe left a long, bleeding line across the back of her hand and part of her wrist. Despite the pain, she managed to seize the glaive and turn in time to deflect a second strike.
"He has one eye, just like me,"
Haldrissa could not help thinking upon first seeing her adversary. He was also an older representative of his race, as she was. However, orcs had never had immortality, and thus, compared chronologically to her, he was an infant. In terms of suffering, though, they were akin to one another.
"Give me the horn, Night Elf. I'll not let you steal my last glory. I brought them all the way from Northrend for this."
Without a moment's hesitation, the commander slammed the horn against the ground. When that proved insufficient to break it, she quickly brought her glaive down on it. A harsh pain erupted from her heart. Acting almost as swiftly, the orc had tried to keep her from destroying the horn. He had succeeded in killing Haldrissa. She knew the wound was fatal. But from his disgusted expression, he understood very well that her death still meant her victory. Someone far away called Haldrissa's name. She had a vague image of Danaea and the others, far less in number than had followed their aging commander, being forced to retreat. The commander's own mount lay dead, several heavy gashes inflicted by either her opponent or some unseen enemy having done in the brave animal. Her vision grew blurred. A murky figure stepped right in front of her. Haldrissa tried to raise her glaive, but there was too much pain from her chest. No longer caring about war, Haldrissa tried to grab the pain and remove it, but all she did was grasp futilely at the gaping wound.
"You fought bravely," she heard the older orc grumble. "You fought cleverly. You don't deserve such slow, painful dying, Night Elf."
Somehow, she nodded. What he said made perfect sense. She had fought long and hard for her people. It was time to rest. If only the pain would go away, she could rest. The axe caught her along the throat, cutting deep, and at last rewarding Haldrissa's valor with rest. Chapter 26. Maiev. Gerard sensed something close ahead. Although armed only with his knife, he pushed on. A minute later he saw one of Maiev's watchers. From her bored stance, she looked as if she had been posted on guard duty for some time. It only took a glimpse past her for Gerard to verify that she was guarding the one he sought. Malfurion storm rage hovered above the ground, his arms and legs splayed to the sides as much as physically possible. Magical energy surrounded him, and it was clear that he was in some pain. At the moment, the archdruid appeared oblivious to his surroundings, although it was possible, not to mention quite probable, that Malfurion secretly worked to somehow free himself. The watcher removed her helmet and wiped her forehead. She looked up at the archdruid, her expression growing from boredom to disdain. Aware that the moment might quickly pass, Gerard had no recourse. As the guard glanced at her charge, he threw the dagger. She fell with barely a sound, the blade through the back of her neck. The helmet tumbled away. Gerard slipped forward, feeling as if he were back in the war against the Burning Legion, so callous about life were his sister and her cohorts. But how else would she become, considering what she has been through? The former guard captain could not help asking himself, managing yet to find some excuse for his sister, his only remaining flesh and blood. She had done so much for the sake of their race that he felt some guilt at having to fight her. And yet, she intended to bring ruin to Darnassus. Seizing up the knife, he wiped it off and looked up at Malfurion. Not at all to his surprise, The Archdruid gazed down at him.
Gerard waited for Malfurion to speak, but when the Archdruid only looked down to his side, Maiev's brother assumed that the trap kept him from doing so. He followed the other Night Elf's eyes, but did not see anything. But there has to be some way to free the Archdruid, Gerard thought. He headed toward the area upon which Malfurion focused, all the while thinking about Maiev. Gerard still knew her better than almost anyone, despite the long passage of time. There were traits, ways of thinking, that he was fairly certain remained consistent. Maiev was no major spellcaster. She knew how to adapt things to her needs, though, and over the millennia, and especially with regard to Illidan's Stormrage, she had probably picked up several tricks. This had to be one of them. Gerard remembered the trap that had almost killed him. Edric had freed him rather quickly. Maiev had needed traps that were strong but easily removed. She had used them to capture and subdue her victims, then no doubt had taken a more personal satisfaction in cutting their throats as they lay helpless. For a moment Gerard hesitated and glanced up again at Malfurion, who could not see him from the current angle.
"This is your twin's fault," the former guard captain could not help thinking somewhat angrily. "She was never like this. You should have had him executed. He deserved that."
He shook off the dark notions. Maiev had made her own choices in the end. She knew well enough what she did, and found life valueless enough to kill as she desired. Mouth set grim, Gerard inspected the tree and ground around it. That there had been a sentry made him certain that the spellwork itself had little in the way of other defenses. He just had to find the key. Hard enough to do. Something very tiny glittered in the bark near the roots. He gingerly brushed off some loose dirt. He found a small stone the color of a pearl wedged into a gap in the bark. Gerard waved his hand over it, but nothing happened. Thinking again of his sister's need for expediency, Gerard simply plucked the stone out.
"Ugh!"
Malfurion, his one side released, swung toward the tree on the opposing side from the one from which Gerard had removed the stone. Gerard feared that the Archdruid would be injured by the collision, but Malfurion managed to put his free hand between him and the trunk. The Archdruid ceased swinging. As Gerard watched in wonder, the tree to which the spell still held him stretched its branches down to its roots. With precision, two smaller branches removed another stone from near the roots, then crushed it between them. Malfurion gently dropped feet first to the ground. Gerard, eyeing the stone in his palm, marveled at both the act and the strength, but wondered why the tree had not done so sooner. Malfurion seemed to expect such curiosity and quickly said, "The trees do not see the world as we do, or think exactly as we do. They wanted to help, but were not certain what they could do that would not harm me, since I could not communicate with them because of the trap. My sister is nothing if not thorough." The Archdruid stared at the dead sentry. "Maiev and her watchers. I still cannot believe it." He peered around. "We had best watch out for Neva. Of all Maiev's watchers, she is the most fanatical and dangerous."
"Neva is dead."
In answer to Malfurion's curious gaze, Gerard shrugged, adding, "I killed her after she and others slew Gen's man Edric and another Worgen."
"Why them?"
Malfurion asked in some shock. "Edric suspected her but doubted anyone would believe it. He and the other died protecting me. Maiev wanted me alive as a dupe. Neva trusted me better dead." "And the Highborn will be next if we do not find her." The Archdruid raised his hands to the trees. Although he seemed to simply stand there afterward, Gerard had to assume Malfurion now communed freely with the forest. A breeze came out of nowhere. Above them, the crowns of the nearest trees gently shook. Lowering his hands, the Archdruid confidently said, "I know the path. Come." They rushed through the forest toward their destination, Gerard at first fearing that another trap set by Maiev might do them in before they could reach her. However, he soon noticed that Malfurion constantly looked up as much as ahead. It slowly dawned on the other Night Elf that the Archdruid was now in constant communication with the trees and other flora. It seemed to take forever, but at last Malfurion bade him halt. The Archdruid's eyes narrowed as he studied the path ahead.
Two of Maiev's watchers ahead. Gerard could see no one, but took his companion's word.
Malfurion crept forward a few steps, then gestured. There was a slight rustle of leaves, followed by a soft grunt.
Hurry,
Malfurion whispered. Curious, Gerard followed. He kept watch for the two sentries, but even when he and Malfurion reached the area where Gerard assumed they should be, he saw nothing. Aware of the other Night Elf's confusion, the Archdruid muttered, "Look up." The veteran soldier did, and saw the figures in question dangling high above. Branches wrapped them as if burial shrouds. They hung very still, and Gerard knew immediately that they were dead.
"They left me no choice," Malfurion murmured as the two moved on.
Gerard nodded his understanding. Even though a veteran soldier, he would have preferred no more bloodshed, but did not shirk from the necessity. Maiev and her watchers would not show them any mercy. Barely had they gone a few yards farther when Gerard heard a voice ahead. He knew his sister instantly. She seemed to be proclaiming something, but the words did not carry well. Maiev had chosen a location where even if she spoke loudly, no one very far away would hear. Malfurion guided him more to the east. His expression grew more concerned as they went.
"What is wrong?" Gerard finally asked.
"We need to move faster. But if we do, she will notice us sooner." As he spoke, there came a low sound that Gerard finally determined was someone else protesting. Although he could still not understand a word, there was a hint of desperation in the tone.
Desperation? From a highborn?
Gerard grimaced. He could only imagine what Maiev might have done to bring one of the spellcasters to such a strait. Ahead of him, Malfurion uttered a low, angry oath. The Archdruid picked up his pace. They came near enough to at last not only better hear, but catch a glimpse of what was going on. Even then, Gerard was slightly confused at what his sister had set into motion.
"Now!"
Maiev almost cheerfully called, her helmet propped in her arm.
"Who is next to be judged?"
"You, I think."
Neither Night Elf could see to whom she spoke, but once more there was a protest.
"I beseech you again to stop this insanity, Maiev Shadowsong. If you think we must be judged, then bring us before the people of Darnassus."
"The people of Darnassus?"
"They will do anything the High Priestess or the Archdruid tells them. I am the only honest arbiter for this. I am the only one who can mete out true justice for your damnable crimes."
"This way," Malfurion whispered. "I want you to go by that tree, then wait." Gerard shook his head.
"No, you will need a distraction. I will draw Maiev's attention."
He paused, then added, "I would like to take her alive, but do what you must." The Archdruid nodded.
"As you must, I am sorry to say.
Be wary, Gerard. At this point, Maiev may consider you nothing more than another enemy to be slain. She let me live only because she wanted me not only to know I had failed to save the Highborn, but also so that she could later tuck me into some foul prison and slowly torture me." The former guard captain's expression grew cold.
"Maiev will try to kill me. I know that."
Gerard's eyes narrowed to slits.
"For her sake, she had better hope she succeeds."
Without another word, he left Malfurion and headed toward his sister. Gerard straightened as he stepped out of the woods, one hand clutching the knife.
"Maiev,"
he quietly called. Without even looking, she replied,
"Gerard, I have to say I am proud of you for finding me."
She peered over her shoulder at her brother. Of course, that does not mean I will not make you regret it. Her hand moved with a speed that surprised even him. A knife shot not toward him, but rather where Malfurion hid. A branch shifted seemingly of its own accord.